You have to go down before you go up. Turn the music all the way down.
Yeah, like, yeah. You got to start fresh.
It's like it was on and it was down and it was like you wanted to fade it up. You just got it.
It's a whole process. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean. On the dot. On the dot.
Finally.
On the dot.
It's been years.
I like to live on the dot. Right on the dot. Show me the dot.
Do people call Toronto T-Dot anymore?
You want to know what's funny? I don't know if they ever did. I don't recall an actual Toronto exchange in which that occurred.
Well, there was a song, right?
The song was as close as I ever got to being around people that called it the dot. Yeah. That's the closest I got to the dot.
You never said it yourself?
I don't think so. Oh, right. And then the dot turned into the six, Will.
Uh-huh.
Did you know why it's called the six?
Something about six territories or something? Six areas? I know there's six of something.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right. Some people originally thought that it had something to do with the area code. But they were wrong.
Yeah.
Of course you got to come to Drake over here.
Of course.
You're looking like a rubber ducky. With the bright yellow. The identity of Toronto remains very unsettled, and I think that's good. Part of the creative tension of Toronto is that it's such a mixture of various cultural influences. Yeah, that's fair. These are the different nicknames that have existed for Toronto, apparently. T-Dot. An abbreviation of T-O, which is Toronto, Ontario. T-O, which is the precursor to T-Dot. T-O.
Yeah.
The Big Smoke, going back to the early 1900s.
I like that one.
Australian writer Alan Rayburn called Toronto the Big Smoke. From there, the name was popularized by Canadian journalists. He called it this because Toronto had a giant reputation and nothing to show for it. Like smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that. That's pretty cool. Big Smoke. I thought it was pollution or something initially. A lot of good names kind of have more than one way that you could interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, like, because then it can kind of create a sort of lore around it. Hogtown, which is obvious. Hogs. Name hogs, actual hogs. Will bring you to
Hogtown. A lot of pork.
Hogs will bring you to Hogtown. And Baby New York. Uh-huh. I've never heard that one before.
Me neither.
I think I've heard, like, Canada's New York. I feel like I've heard people say that before, but Baby New York, I never heard that.
Yeah.
Anyway, six came in, six municipalities making up Metro Toronto. As all the people who say that they live in Toronto, if somebody were to ask you from outside of Toronto and you lived in one of these areas, you say, I live in Toronto, but to the people in Toronto, you don't live in Toronto. Like, you would never say you live in Toronto to somebody from Toronto.
Where are they, like, converted as? Like, boroughs or something?
Yeah, yeah. They call in New York, they call them boroughs.
Yeah.
But then you get people that will just be like, oh, in the city. Oh, do you live in the city? And then the city becomes the actual name brand place. Uh-huh. Like, and then everywhere else is like sort of Toronto. Like that's what happens with urban sprawl. Chicago's a lot like that too.
Yeah. Outside the city, inside the city.
Are you? Yeah. Or I'm going into the city later.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But like you're not going to a different place.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're not going out of town, which is something completely different. And
right,
then,
right.
And you know where those places would be if you actually were going out of town.
Uh-huh.
Like, people who go on sort of semi-local trips around here, there's like, you could be going somewhere that's definitely, in your mind, not in Toronto anymore.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is weird because it's not a proximity thing. It's more a perception thing. Like if you go to Hamilton, you're not in Toronto. But you're also not as far away as some places that sort of feel included in Toronto. Sure. That's odd.
Yeah. How that works in your mind. I always get confused with North York because it's kind of in the city. It has like its own
okay.
area. But it feels like the middle ground.
It is absolutely the transition.
Yeah.
Between the suburbs and the city. It happens in North York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has a prominent mall there as well.
It happens in North York.
Uh-huh.
At least around here. But North York is definitely officially part of the city of Toronto, right?
And we don't call it like...
Not the downtown. Not the downtown part, but like the... Whatever. The greater... Man, when you get into that, it's like the Greater Toronto Area.
The GTA.
What are you talking about? That's everything. That's everywhere you go.
I always call it North York Uptown. It's what all my friends call it.
I know. I don't really think that makes a lot of sense because I've heard people say that about Yonge and Eglinton.
Yeah, that's true.
Uptown. Hey, we don't have Uptown. We don't have an Uptown. We definitely have Downtown. There is no Uptown. I'm canceling Uptown in Toronto. There's no such thing.
Okay.
I've heard people use Uptown to refer to incredibly far places up.
Yeah.
I gotta head Uptown later. Uptown where? How far? Because guess what? It goes forever. And in Toronto specifically, because Yonge Street goes forever.
Yeah.
You can keep traveling up and the development just keeps going. There's very few breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So where does up stop as you keep going up? Yeah. Down is pretty obvious. You run out of down. You run into the lake.
You get into the lake. Ontario.
You run out of downtown.
Yeah.
So that's a little easier. Some places have actual uptowns. We don't have an actual uptown. I think if you had a boundary, if you had a parameter, like a boundary on each side, so to the south you had water and to the north you had water, now we're talking uptown and downtown. Where are you going? Uptown. Where are you going? Downtown. Town runs out.
Yeah. Should be a border.
You got urban sprawl going on over here.
Yeah.
Uptown, downtown.
It's a lot of gradient.
Yeah, or some people might think it's the transit system. Because the transit system sort of used to define that northern boundary, subway system. But then they expanded it, and then it goes to Vaughan. And it's like, oh, well, Vaughan is right on the edge of North York. And
it is, yeah.
Okay, now you got the... But it's not technically part of the city. It's definitely part of the Greater Toronto Area. I kind of like this stuff, though. I would always go on those websites, City Data, and read about different cities and municipalities and different boundaries and movements and demographics. And, like, I find this stuff to be relatively interesting.
Yeah.
Movements.
And how it evolves over time, how it changes.
It's so hard. It's one of those things. It's almost like armchair quarterback stuff where you look at it in backwards and you go, I would have done it like this. But then the whole thing is happening in real time and everything's getting bolted on from a planning perspective. Yeah, and people are like, I wouldn't have done the 401. It's like, you wouldn't have? You don't know what you were dealing with at the time. You don't know what the presentation looked like. Oh, the Gardner Expressway has always been a disaster. And it's like, has it always or was it cool at one time? I mean, even the way I like that they renovated the stadium, the Rogers Center, previously SkyDome, because I know there's rumors, oh, we're going to rip it down, and they're probably still going to rip it down.
Mm-hmm.
But to go in and in the meantime, like, sort of update it.
Yeah.
Because, like, these type of stadiums are not really the thing that people are doing anymore. They're much more open and city integrated, whereas this was like a spaceship you enter. It was like kind of like a...
Yeah.
I don't know. I have nostalgia. You can't ask me about it because I have like childhood stuff about this building. Like I don't care how ugly you think it is. It's my kind of ugly. You understand?
Okay.
Have you visited the renos?
No.
Nope. I haven't. It's definitely happening this summer for sure. I'm gonna go check out the renos.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, what you got for me? What you got for me today? No Elon, right? No Elon allowed. We're on Elon vacation right now.
There's one or two. We can make it very quick.
Somebody just mentioned I don't have a coffee today. You know what? That's actually, I wish I did. Will does. Look at that guy sipping away over there. He's having a time and I'm not.
This is hot water.
Hot water?
Yeah.
Is that
I
want to
keep hydrated.
Is that your thing? Hot water?
I drink coffee in the morning, right when I get up. And then when I'm here, I just hot water. I don't know.
Hot water.
Yeah. I would make a coffee if we have a coffee machine.
We had one for a short period of time.
Yeah.
It was in and it was out.
Oh.
maybe get one back in here. Who knows? I mean, it seems like a thing we could do.
No, impossible.
Oh, good Lord. Shout out Bartos. Discussing Google is worth to address a Pixel support and availability in non-English speaking countries. I have to assume that they would want to roll it out to more countries. I don't know what restrictions or complications exist. Shout out Andre. Only peasants drink Budweiser and Bud Light, according to Andre.
Yeah, the poll's out.
But listen, Bud Light is an extremely popular beer. I think on the given day, it happens to be the most popular. I'm not saying it makes it better. I'm just letting you know you're calling a lot of people peasants. That's all I'm trying to.
Yeah.
But listen, I feel like people in there are talking about German beers and stuff, and that's fair. It's all different flavors out there.
Well, the poll's out. Do you drink Bud Light?
The poll is out.
Yeah, I have a poll.
What is the point of it?
Drinking Bud Light? ? Yes, no, underage. Like currently.
Why Bud Light? What's the significance?
Just the controversy.
Oh, the Dylan stuff?
Yeah.
That's a topic today?
No. It isn't.
Oh, but you're just trying to... You're a sneak attack. You're being controversial via poll.
Yeah, someone wants to put a controversial poll. So I did.
A controversial poll without covering the controversial story.
Yeah.
Damn, dude, this is deep.
Yeah. Well, the discussion could be online in the chat.
Let me tell you something. I appreciate most. Like, I'm not one of these guys. I take a sip of a beer and I'm like, oh, it's piss. It tastes like piss. Like, this is not me. So
you accept all.
I don't choose Bud Light. I'm not going to lie. I don't choose for Bud Light. I don't reach for Bud Light. But if somebody hands me a Bud Light, I'm not spitting it on the ground. There's some beers I like more than others, but I'm not discriminating at that level.
Uh-huh.
Like, the main thing is a cold beer shared amongst friends at the right moment. Like, what it's about.
Yeah, nothing wrong with
that. Let's not get carried away here. That's what it's about. And so that's when you end up passing around and trying different things and, you know.
Glass bottle or can?
Well, because I'm so often at the rink when I'm drinking and things like this with pals, you're only allowed cans. But definitely, like, in a restaurant type setting or anything more formal. I mean, the bottle is fun.
All right.
Oh, or a glass. I mean, if you're at a bar, then
yeah.
I don't know where we're talking about here. I don't have a tap at my house yet.
No.
But I guess you can pour a bottle in a glass. That's always an interesting one. Pouring the bottle in the glass at home. You're like, you know what? I want to drink this out of a glass.
Yeah, I do that.
So I'm going to pour the bottle of beer into the glass so that it's fancier.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know why I feel kind of weird about that because I think I know why, actually.
Okay.
Because in my house, it's so chaotic.
You don't have time?
Well, no, the bottle, I think, provides slightly more protection.
Okay.
Like for a spill, I might have a split second to grab it by the neck.
Right.
And not have a complete disaster going on. I think about these things. You know, I have like lids and different cups for different people in my family. When they're very small, they have, you wouldn't believe, the contraptions.
Uh-huh.
And they still find a way to destroy things and spill it. Like, sure. They'll defeat any system you want to put in place. That's their job. They go, oh, nice fancy system you've got there. Oh, you're organized. They stare in your face. Cute.
Your kid is calling you out.
You're organized. isn't that cute? Huh? You think you're orderly. Isn't that cute?
Throws a pizza at your
face. Guess what? I'm not.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm learning and I have an excuse.
Punches you in the gut.
And I'm one. Yeah. So I can get away with things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can pour your beer into a pint glass. I mean, whatever you want to do, man.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling.
It's up to you, man. You want to talk about Alphabet today? Alphabet shares fall in a report that Samsung may dump Google search in favor of Bing. Well, Bing is all about your GPTs these days. Bing is the new kid on the block.
Yeah.
Bing is the new girl in the school.
Uh-huh.
You know how that goes, right, Will?
With the skirt?
Easy.
I got put out there.
I didn't need to get that specific.
Yeah.
Listen, how big of a deal is this AI thing for search? Has it really affected me or influenced my behaviors? Not really. I haven't reached for this Bing. If it truly turns out to be the future of search and so forth, then Alphabet needs to pick its game up and catch up and get moving in this race here. I know they put out the Bard. People said, hey, your Bard is not there, sir. You're lagging on this one. You were asleep at the wheel. Mm-hmm. You're Alphabet. You're Google. How are you asleep at the wheel on this one? You got all the guys. You got all the guys and all the girls. You got all the engineers. You got all the money.
Yeah, when I think about AI, I think of Google.
Like they should have.
Because they have been using, doing assistant first, and they do it really, really well.
Yeah. So let's see here. Alphabet shares fell as much as 4% on Monday following a report South Korea's Samsung Electronics was considering replacing Google with Microsoft-owned Bing as the default search engine on its devices. The report published by the New York Times over the weekend underscores the growing challenges Google's $162 billion a year search engine business faced from Bing, a minor player that has risen to prominence recently after the integration of the artificial intelligence tech behind ChatGPT. Now, could they cut a deal? Let's see here. $20 billion tied to similar Apple contract. Cut a contract. Google's reaction to the threat was panic as the company earns an estimated $3 billion in annual revenue from the Samsung contract. Can't they cut a deal? Can't they up their bid? Can't they say, hey, include it for this much?
But what if, Bing is so good and Samsung wants it so bad in their OS that any kind of money Samsung, would be massive?
And we need it so bad.
Yeah, they're drooling.
They're like, it's a search engine. Oh, we need it so bad. Listen. I'm looking at the chat right now. I'm saying there's a new Dalai Lama controversy. Elon was on Tucker Carlson. Yeah. Like, there's stuff going on here. Everyone yelling and screaming at me. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, they got to cut a deal. I think you got to stay on Samsung devices. It's too prominent. It's a big deal. My recommendation to Google is give them what they want so you can stay there. I don't think this is about the superiority of the search engine. I don't think Bing is close enough to completely displacing it yet in terms of brand awareness and search volume. It could happen if it's really that good. But in the meantime, I would think that there's a negotiation to be had that I find this unlikely. It's possible, but unlikely. And don't forget, Microsoft could make their very own bid. They could be like, hey, Samsung, heard of our new kid on the block? How about we throw in a little bit of this and that and we get a deal done? And Samsung says, you know what? Our users might not care that much. Now's the time. They might not be mad at us for doing something like this. Maybe we'll take your money instead if your bid happens to be reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Apple launches its new high-yield savings account with 4.15% APY. Well, now you've got me. 4.15, I'm in.
You like the one.
Yeah, that's all I needed.
4.15. Yeah.
Savings account for Apple Card users available today. Users can now choose to save their daily cash rewards earned by spending money. Oh, let me just, since we're on this topic, I had this very novel experience the other day, or ongoing, I should say.
Okay.
Which is with PayPal. Now, you're sitting there saying, what? What? You care about PayPal? What?
A lot of people still use PayPal.
Well, here's what happened to me, and now I'm using it again. It's like sometimes you don't know what is going to be the novel feature that reinvigorates your relationship with a product. Mm. This worked on me. So what happened, I went to pay for something online. I selected PayPal, and it prompted me to use my rewards instead of my actual money. Now, you might be saying, what rewards are you talking about? I'm talking about my actual credit card rewards. So, you know how you accumulate rewards on your credit card as you do your typical spending?
Yeah.
Now, normally, you have to go into their interface in order to extract value from that. Like, I don't know, they're going to send you a gift card or a prize or maybe a coffee maker for the studio.
Okay.
When you spend a lot on your credit card.
Yeah.
In this case, it's so direct and simple. It's like, no, that credit card has rewards on it. Do you want to use them for this purchase? Right, oh, okay. Right there, right while you're already checking out. And you're like, oh my God, that's such a perfect user experience. I don't want to go into some separate interface. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if I'm getting the best value on those points. Probably not. And you could also do other things like use those points to pay down your balance, whatever it's. But this user experience was so smooth that I was like, the other payment processing apps don't give me that option. And now I'm clicking on PayPal to see, like, just because of that option.
Really?
To use that balance. The balance is just sitting there in rewards. I'll never use it for anything else. It's just going to sit in there.
And then it'll just automatically subtract when you check out.
It's right in that moment, yeah. Right? As you when you click pay, it doesn't come out of your credit card. It doesn't come out of your PayPal balance. It comes straight from rewards to the retailer, and that's it. Mm. It almost feels like you got it for free or something. I mean, you didn't, but it's a novel experience, what I'm trying to get at.
Right. Where you don't have to think about it.
Anyway, I just want to, I would never have talked about that if you didn't bring up this story. But anyway, Apple wants more of your financial activity. They want your Apple card. They want your credit. They want your... What is this Dalai Lama stuff that everybody's shouting about in the chat? By the way, shout out Orobot. What did he do differently in relationship to whatever's has happened? I didn't know that there was an update. Why did you type Itachi? That's the user that keeps talking about it. Just go to Dalai Lama News. Misrepresented in the West. What? Another controversy. It can't be the Lady Gaga thing. What? Another video? 2 days ago? Is this real? I don't. This is real time, all right, guys? Deal with me here. I don't know this website. This could be a complete scam. He touches the singer's leg. Will, is this like, is this real stuff?
Well, you're telling me. I don't know.
Is this real? No, I'm asking your opinion. Okay, go. Yeah, there we go. Here we go. We got a video.
I think it needs to run an ad.
No, it does. Here you go. He's about to reach over. Oh.
A little tickle on the knee there?
Huh.
Okay. Well.
17-second video. The religious leader is seen paying little attention to the woman who is speaking during the conference. He looked down at her leg and saw that she was wearing torn trousers from the knees. So he stretched out his left hand with his fingers and touched Gaga's skin. When he tried to do the same on the other leg, she grabbed his hand and prevented him from doing so. This is an old video. This is a thing. I don't know if it was talked about at the time, but maybe people are now combining.
Yeah, in the past.
Variety of stories.
This is what you did.
And like using it as evidence that it's an ongoing type of thing. I believe that's what you expected me to look at, but all right. He touched the leg. I don't think she wanted the leg touched.
Okay.
That's fair. Solution for Google, distribute pixels EU-wide, ensuring Bing is no longer the default search engine. There you go. Well, this guy really wants a Google Pixel in his local region, and it is one way of enabling a greater reach for Google search, and it's probably one of the big reasons that Google got in the hardware market in the first place. Like, we got all these services. How do we ensure that they remain the de facto services? One way, let's control the hardware. It gives us a little more versatility. A little more capability. And yeah, in the meantime, the Pixel device is half decent. Mm-hmm. So the Apple Store in India, it has opened.
Yes.
As of yesterday?
Yesterday, I believe, yeah. Tim Cook was there. He tweeted it out.
Told you, man. Went straight from Coachella.
Yeah.
Private jet. Kept the same badge on. So it's two stories. And it is this unique sort of flat iron shape thing going on.
Uh-huh.
I like it. Looks pretty nice in there. You got the live plants on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise it looks like an Apple store. But this is big news for India. It's the first one.
Yeah, very sustainable. Apparently it doesn't use any fossil fuels.
Well, they got some solar up top.
I think so. They haven't shown the top, but this is what it looks like on the inside.
We got the PR team working overtime. They invited all the YouTubers, Indian tech YouTubers over there, to get all your videos made. They look to have a tremendous amount of staff. ready to go. And I, and lots of access. You see how they just let everybody shoot videos wherever they wanted?
Yeah.
That's one way to make it happen.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, pretty clean.
I like it. Yeah, I like a two-story thing if you've got the space for it. And
a lot of wood.
But this is, their design language is pretty uniform. They don't get too crazy per region as far as the design language.
Yeah.
The architecture and the external aspect of the store tends to be a little more unique per region. But once you get inside, they all seem to have that same kind of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But congrats to Apple on this. And obviously, I presume a lot of Indian tech fans are going to go check this out if they're nearby. It's going to be a pretty popular spot until more of them open up. This is the first one. This one is in Mumbai. And then the next one is opening like next week or something in Delhi.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to do a 1-2 punch on that. And it's probably the start of a heck of a lot more of these things over there.
Yeah. Shout out Track and Tech.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for use of those video clips.
Mm-hmm.
Canada Public Broadcaster CBC's Twitter account labeled 69% government-funded media. Oh, boy. The trolling continues?
Yeah, just like NPR.
Canada's CBC pauses its Twitter activities over the label. It says questions its editorial independence. Yes, exactly the same thing that... No, not PBS, NPR.
NPR.
Yeah. PBS, like, I think they got it sorted out, or what did they do with PBS? Public Broadcasting... I didn't hear any kind of uproar. BBC was like, hey, you mislabeled us. We're not exactly that. We're kind of this. And then they wanted percentages and these conversations came up.
I think it's on, BBC is on Elon's good side for now. But CBC, no.
CBC. CBC's move follows that of the National Public Radio in the United States over government-funded tech. No, CBC is definitely... partially government funded. I mean, that's a well-known characteristic. Is it actually 69% or he's having fun? So then that's kind of goofy, because if you're actually using the label to tell, that's kind of goofy.
They said it's like 30, CBC said it was 30% government funded. So Elon's like, okay, well, 69. Or sorry, they said it was 70%.
Oh,
government funded.
Okay, well then that is better than totally lying. The Twitter label on the CBC site previously showed 70% government funded media, but Twitter owner Elon Musk said the Canadian Broadcasting Corp said they're less than 70% government funded. So he corrected the label to 69. CBC said it will pause its Twitter activities over the labeling. A spat that has also drawn in Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his conservative rival Pierre Poilievre.
Yeah, he said he has something to say about it.
I think it says a lot about the Conservative Party of Canada that they're choosing to constantly attack independent media organizations, journalists who are working hard to keep Canadians informed and support our democracy. CBC Radio-Canada serves right across the country, delivers local news and local content in many regions of the country that, yes, has been challenged over the past years. But the idea of adding to that challenges and laying on by attacking this Canadian institution, attacking the culture and local content that is so important to so many Canadians, really indicates...
Look at Elon's reply.
The approach that Mr. Poilievre is putting forward.
Still trolling.
And I think it is telling that in order to attack this institution that is important for many, many Canadians, he runs to American billionaires, the tech giants that they continue to defend in committee and in their approach on our legislation to make tech giants pay their fair share. Conservatives are always there to defend them. So when they're trying to attack a foundational Canadian institution, the fact that he has to run to American billionaires for support to attack.
What
Canadians,
is the running to American billionaire part?
About Mr. Poilievre.
Is he talking about Elon?
Maybe.
I presume that's what he's talking about. I mean, as far as American tech billionaires go. Well, I mean, it's kind of funny, but it just when you see it with such an official type of stamp, and it is kind of, I'll tell you the other part that's goofy, to say you're less than 70% funded, what, that's, there's a lot of numbers that are less than 70%.
Yeah.
What is the point of that? Why not just say 70% or say the exact percentage amount? That's an odd one. I presume it's something like there's probably some sort of agreement that that's the maximum that they're allowed to be funded. And so they just say at any given point in time, we're less than 70% funded. But it does kind of open you up to this joke. And and it certainly opens you up to the label. And if you are government funded, then be government funded. And state government funding, I don't really see what the issue is. I think most people, well, maybe most people don't know that. But certainly a lot do know that that CBC is government funded, and people are free to have their point of view on that, whether they think that that's a good thing or a bad thing, and or whether or not they want to look through, you know, maybe perceive what they're seeing there through a slightly different lens, given that information that it is government funded. And at any point in time, there is a government funding those activities.
But so, the fact that it's 69% is just like someone who's looking for some sort of officiality. It's like 69, like the label of it is just so trolling.
But in all honesty, if on the website, which is where they're getting this information from, because I don't think this is like an open book policy, if it says under 70, what are you writing? They don't have that option in here. Mm-hmm. They could put government funded media, but then this different media got upset about it and said, hey, it's whatever percentage is. So if they're going to put percentages in there and you say under 70, now maybe what needs to happen, and probably what should happen in all honesty, I mean, I know laughs aside, is that there should be a submission in order to actually figure out what the true percentages or the rough percentages, and then they can submit themselves whatever that number is. Mm-hmm. But under a certain number doesn't really tell you much. And it just so happens to land on his favorite number. So it turns into a troll. But I agree with you. It makes you question the whole thing, because if you didn't know that CBC was actually under 70% government funded, you might look at this in isolation and think it's a joke.
Yes.
In which case you lose respect for the whole government funded label. So there's a risk factor there.
Yeah.
But for anybody who cared enough to look into it, they would realize, no, that's an actual thing. They claim they're under 70%. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk promises again, encrypted DMs are coming to Twitter, continuing the enhancements and turning Twitter into this supposed everything app with finance and communication is a big one. You got to have it. Uh-huh. It has to be a place where people feel comfortable communicating. So then they have to entrust some system for privacy. Elon Musk says Twitter's direct messages are going to be encrypted in an effort to make it harder for intelligence agencies around the world to access private communications, according to an interview he gave with, this is part of his Tucker Carlson interview, which I haven't watched. Maybe I'll watch it. Hopefully, you know what? Maybe I'll watch it today. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a 2-part series. The first one came out. I think there's another one that's airing tonight.
So how long is this first one?
About 30, 40 minutes. The last time I checked, Fox News kind of put out clips of it. But you can kind of string them together.
Okay, so the total interview might be like an hour and a half, and it's been split into a bunch of different parts, or at least two parts.
Yeah.
So he's been promising this for a while. One of the things we're about to release is the ability to encrypt your DMs. That's pretty heavy duty, though, because a lot of well-known people, reporters, talking to their sources, government officials, rich people in the world, they're DMing each other. And the assumption, obviously, was incorrect. But was that's private, but that was being read by various governments? Carlson asked. Okay, keep scrolling. Yeah, yes, Musk replied. Carlson called it scary before Musk elaborated on his plans for encrypted DMs. So, like I said, we're moving to have the DMs be optionally encrypted. I mean, there's like a lot of DM conversations, which are, sorry, you went too fast, which are just chatting with friends. Not important. It's hopefully coming out later this month, but no later than next month. So you will have apparently some option to encrypt your conversations. There are, of course, plenty of other encrypted messaging systems that people can use. However, I do think there's a lot of people that have a misconception about their conversations in Twitter and the fact that whether they can or can't be read. I think there's a lot of people who don't truly understand what's going on in there.
I thought it was encrypted for a very long time. But do you think it's going to be a paywall kind of feature?
Twitter Blue. Add it to the laundry list.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because he really wants the private messaging, like for everyone. Right?
Yeah,
like,
but what isn't really what isn't behind Twitter Blue at this point? All the good stuff is going there.
He's got to make some money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's got to make some money.
Yeah. No, I mean, Twitter has got to make some money, is what I mean.
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah.
Straight into his bank account. Yeah. Encrypted messages. Dump it. Pixel 7a to start at $4.99, available in stores May 11th. Wait, $4.99, isn't that too much? Too much money? Google's Pixel 7a is just a few weeks away, rumored to launch at Google I.O. 2023 on May 10th. A $50 increase over last year's model. That's right. Given Google's history of providing incredible value products, according to 9to5 Google, by the way, the Pixel A series, a $50 increase does seem to come at an interesting time. Somewhat unfortunate, as the economy is being more turbulent and phone prices seem to be on the rise. Yeah, you'd be sitting there thinking, I want to be at $449. I don't want to be at $499 because, like, what can you get a Pixel 7 for right now is very close to that. So it's not really tremendous incentive. Yeah, I presume it'll be a decent value. Okay, so Pixel 7 is $526 USD? That's a weird price.
Yeah. Is it $499 currently?
Pixel 7 is on sale for a new low price of $449. So is the 7A going to actually be better than the 7 regular?
Interesting, eh?
Well, this is what I'm talking about.
Because the A is usually the more budget-friendly one.
Now, for the record, it didn't originally cost that. It's just that it's old now, so you're seeing discounted prices on it.
Yeah.
Save $150. Actually, go to the Google US store right there. It's right there. Yeah, save $150. So, and you're seeing it in Canadian figures, which brings you to $599. Maybe if you can change the region here, we can determine the U.S. equivalent of that. But maybe the 7A, for the first time ever, is going to actually have a more compelling spec than the standard 7 that they continue to sell. It's about all I can think, because it's currently listed at $449. Either that, or the report is off and it doesn't actually go for $499. But either way, that's kind of an odd development, strange finding that the 7A is rumored to start at $499. We'll see. May 11th isn't that far away. We'll find out. Xiaomi 13 Ultra to launch with brightest smartphone display as full design shown in multiple colors. Ooh, I like bright displays. I purchased a device in an attempt to measure the output of these displays and take them outside in sunlight to hit that max number of nits. Xiaomi has confirmed that its next Ultra smartphone will showcase Surge P2 and G1 chips. According to the company, these will work in tandem with an emergency long battery life mode to deliver up to 1 hour battery life with 1% charge remaining. Ooh, that's pretty cool. 1 hour of battery life with only 1% charge. Like a true emergency mode. Oh, we got a little demo video. I see we have that sort of leather-like texture on the back. Very intense and dramatic intro video here. Happening very soon on the 18th, I guess. Xiaomi markets the Ultra as featuring a display capable of reaching 2,600 nits, 100 nits more than the Find X Pro. While the value does not represent full panel brightness, Xiaomi claims that the TCL C7 panel will also provide better viewing angles, lower power consumption than the Samsung Display E6 panel found in most flagship smartphones. So not only are they saying you're getting a lot of nits, we're breaking records over here, they're also saying, hey, TCL is beating Samsung.
That's the most important
point. Which is quite a thing to say as well. Of course, people will want to peek at this thing and determine if they really feel that that's the case. Other display,
the eyeball bleed test.
There you go. The other display characteristics that matter to people, resolution, likely 3200 by 1440. So LTPO. Well, hey, listen, if they want to come out and say, hey, we got the Ultra display, we got the best display, they want to put the Ultra tag on it, then they obviously are going to try to make the case that their Ultra is better than everybody else's Ultra.
Mm-hmm. The Ultra Ultra.
Go back to that other slide about the material on the back. Just curious what they're calling. I don't know what they're calling it, but I don't think they're using real leather. Although I'd be quite interested if that was the case. The way they're showing it.
9.9% something.
I know. Just the way they're showing it folded up like that makes me believe it is, but I don't. There's no way they're doing that. They're going to say 99% renewable.
Sure.
Feels like some kind of leather type of thing. Streamers have a Gen Z problem. New data reveals why younger subscribers are more likely to cancel as inflation forces them to choose between Netflix and necessities. Netflix or lunch.
Mm.
That's what they're forced to figure out. There goes Mo. There
it's
he goes.
A tough call.
That was a good cut. That was a great edit, Will.
Okay.
Like you just had it. You just nailed the timing because he almost got away.
Yeah, I'm always aware of Mo Watch.
And you weren't going to let him go get away without some fanfare. Nearly two-thirds of millennial and Gen Z consumers have canceled the streaming service in the past 6 months, according to a Deloitte survey. Many blamed inflation for their decision to cut back on streamers like Netflix. Younger viewers told Insider about choosing between entertainment and essentials like gas and groceries. Streaming, getting ready to go, streaming, fresh produce, streaming, and a box of cereal. Mm-hmm. How do you weigh those things out, Will? I mean, I think eating is probably better than streaming. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just putting that out there. All the expenses started piling up and piling up and piling up to the point where I was like, man, I don't have enough room in my budget. This is what one user told Insider. Last year, by shedding his premium Netflix subscription and ad-free live TV membership with Hulu, McMiller trimmed nearly $100 from his monthly budget. It's true. These prices,
they add up.
They've been going up, man.
They really add up.
They've been going up, and then everything else is costing more. You're just a guy trying to eat a chicken Big Mac and hating it. That'll cost you $13 or something.
Yeah.
New research released Monday by Deloitte illustrates what this phenomenon means for streamers. Nearly a third of millennial respondents, 32%, and 30% of members of Gen Z said they'd canceled at least one paid entertainment subscription within the past 6 months to save money. Well, you guys let me know in the comments here. Are you canceling subscriptions if you pulled the plug? If so, what did you cancel and how much were you paying for it? I'm curious on that number, but I get it. It's like you look at it. You know, the other thing that's happened in tandem is the number of things that you can watch that are free. Along with your connection, like the type of stuff you can watch on YouTube and all the short form stuff and everything else. And you say, you know what? I'm going to save a few bucks over here. I'm going to watch this other stuff instead when I got a moment, and I'm going to go buy a loaf of bread. I'm going to go buy.
Because now I can afford it.
The essentials.
Yeah.
Withings Body Smart Scale includes an eyes closed mode that hides your weight. I got to get this scale, by the way. I'm a big fan of Withings.
So you know about this.
I don't have this this scale yet.
Oh, okay.
This is their new scale, right?
Oh, so you have the previous one.
Previous gen.
Okay.
It doesn't hide my body. I would not want it to hide my weight.
Some people would want that.
The Body Smart Scale and app will measure and track your weight, but can do it secretly. But then eventually you're going to have to look at it. I guess maybe you're having a really bad day. Like, I don't want to see it today.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird. That doesn't fit with my psyche at all. I would just be like, what am I doing? It's a scale to tell you your weight. If I don't want to know my weight that day, I just won't check. But then again, then you give up the, I guess, okay, so that's where they feel like it's going to fit in. Somebody is going to want to know at a later date what their weight was on that. See, for me, it's not even a calculated decision. Sometimes I just don't check, even though I'm tracking over time. Some days I just don't bother with it, because for me that's like one data point. Okay, I missed one data point, I'll live.
Yeah,
but this is something to do with the psyche here. Withings has slowly expanded the type of health data captured by its smart scales, and over a year ago it announced its body scan scale. So I don't have this yet. It adds a retractable handle with four additional electrodes, allowing it to record six lead electrocardiograms, as well as provide body fat, muscle mass, and bone mass measurements for a user's torso and their individual limbs. That is so cool. See, I just think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It is not available yet. It should be available in the U.S. later this year, but today the company announced another addition to its smart scale line with fewer features, but also a price tag that manages to squeak under 100. So these are two totally separate products. The one I want is the body scan scale, which is not out yet. It's going to cost a lot of money, but it's going to give you incredible amount of feedback about your body composition.
Right.
This smart scale is like a toned down version. It'll give you your... what's it going to give you? A BMR, basal metabolic rate. I mean, it'll give you a lot of feedback still. Body fat, and it's like $100 and you can hide your weight on it. But I'm waiting for the other one with the handle. You pull it out and you're like, you do the whole scan.
Uh-huh.
That's sick.
Exciting.
I don't know what it is. What my attraction is to the kind of body tech. Like, it's not even like I'm a fitness freak or anything. It just feels like cool data to have.
Like, are you afraid of, like, too intrusive? Like, knowing your sleep, like, the company knowing your sleep and your body weight, heart rate, all that stuff, biometrics.
They're trying to kill me? I'm trying to kill me? They're like, great, we finally have enough on him. Consider him dead. We'll send the...
I guess health is a bit of a sensitive issue for privacy. More so than, like, internet habits.
Yeah, well, it's very personal.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying. But I don't know. It's a tough one. Kind of yes, kind of no. Because I also realize that when it comes to health, huge data sets can be extremely helpful.
Yeah, to improve like your lifestyle or something.
But also when it comes to precursors to disease, once you have these big numbers put together, you can all of a sudden come to some conclusions about early markers for certain potential problems that don't need to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the degree to which these are effective, I mean, they probably have to put all types of disclaimers in there and such, but even the scale I have right now attempts to tell you things like vascular health, mm-hmm. like actually analyze your veins and your... Like things beyond how a person would typically track health. They think, oh, I'm a certain weight, so that's the end of that. I'm doing everything great. And it's like there's all these other cool kind of markers you can look at as a feedback. And they're all relative to everybody else's markers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to detach it. Like the bigger the data set, the more we can extract from it. But I also hear you where it's like people need an opportunity to opt out as well.
Mm-hmm.
As far as sharing of that data and so forth. And I don't know exactly what Withings' policy is. I know I clicked a bunch of yeses.
You know, except all.
Much like much like Tesla staring into my soul as I drive FSD.
Uh-huh.
And it's gotten so much more intrusive. I'm not going to lie, dude. It's so much more intrusive now.
Why?
I look away for 2 seconds, like, look at the route, look at the route. I'm just like, oh. I get it, but there's people who don't have self-driving who are more distracted than I am as I reach for my mug or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
wow,
okay. Leave me alone. Like,
you should do an update.
I don't know. They're tweaking it so frequently that every time it feels like, okay, what's happening this time? Like another recent one, exiting the lane. There's one section of road where it's convinced that I'm exiting the lane every time.
Mm.
And I use this section of road so frequently that I'm like, I want a way of like marking that as no, I'm not leaving the lane. Because every time it's, and that's not what's happening.
Right,
and it's like,
right.
I want to drive a different way because of it.
Yeah. I think you can contact Tesla in the car.
Okay. All right.
By just saying like, hey,
this is
like,
crazy. This should be,
they would know where.
This should be like auto raise on suspension. I could just click a button right away. Like, was this correct? Particularly once the pattern has happened enough times. Like, do you really think I'm exiting the road on my way to work every single day at the exact same spot?
Yeah, I think someone's ruining that data. like maybe a previous Tesla that's just constantly incorrect. And then Tesla kind of has that data to map out your Tesla experience.
Why am I getting canceled in India? What's that about?
Who knows?
What? Explain that to me.
Me explain you getting canceled?
Yes. Give me your speculation as to why. There's some sort of beef going on over here. And it has something to do with Dalai Lama or what I did or didn't say. I don't know what it is, though. Polestar's new electric car has no rear window. Whoa, just camera. See, that's interesting because forever what they wanted to do is put the cameras on the side mirrors and they couldn't do it. They were always like, well, what if you need these things? It's highway traffic. What if there's a malfunction? You need to have these mirrors. But I haven't seen it on the rear exclusively without the window other than on work vans. Mm-hmm. There's some work vans that have this because you can't. You simply can't see out the back. Mm-hmm. But this actually kind of almost as a design element gets you thinking, why do you need glass there if you have this really high quality camera?
Yeah.
I mean, I presume obviously that can malfunction as well. But, you know, you might get some ice buildup on there. You don't have to clean the entire glass. Just clean the camera.
Sure. Sure.
I'm just putting this all through.
I like that idea.
My processing here. It helps the companies. Okay, here we go. Those in glass houses, you got to go down to the next paragraph for us to find out why. It's an idea that the company explored with its 2020 Precept concept car, but here it is for real. Polestar has done it by embracing the capabilities of a high-definition screen that replaces the age-old rear-view mirror. This displays a real-time feed from a roof-mounted rear camera and delivers a much broader field of vision. Yeah, it's like it gives you like a wide angle view that you couldn't possibly generate just with your own eyes and a mirror through the glass. Mm-hmm. There's many cars, by the way, that feature these things, but they often have the glass as well. You have this camera out the back that can you flip down. You see it in the, I think the Hummer EV had that. There's a number of vehicles that have mm-hmm. this. In the past, we've always had to provide an opening at the rear for a physical mirror. Camera tech is now very high resolution. It works well at nighttime, and the software is constantly being upgraded. So we can add value into the system over time. We could remove the rear window and move the whole structure further back. It creates a cocoon. Hmm. So they're saying, hey, it's better anyway, so we don't need the glass. We got an aerodynamic advantage here. The car's development has been driven by the availability of the technology, but it also improves aerodynamics and it improves the roominess of the interior. On an SUV coupe, these are often in conflict. You aim to get a sleek silhouette. Otherwise, what's the point? But then the interior space is compromised. You know what this reminds me of? Sometimes when you get the glass panel roof option on your vehicle, it will actually give you less headroom. You'd think, how is that possible? But it's because of the pieces that hold it in place have to come down lower than if you just had a roof structure that was lighter, lighter weight. So I presume they can get a little bit more in internal interior volume without having to have that piece of glass back there as far as the support pieces to hold it in place. Maybe they can make it a little bit lighter, the vehicle, so you can get a slightly better range.
Interesting.
So you can understand what the advantages or what the advantages that they're exploring, but it kind of looks funky when you see it.
Yeah.
You're so used to seeing glass back there. Mm-hmm. Volkswagen ID7 shows not every EV needs to be an SUV. Well, this is the one that's coming for the Model 3. Is this the Model 3 killer? Yeah, it is.
It's a sedan or is it SUV?
No, it's a sedan. That's why I say Model 3. It has a trunk. I believe it has a trunk. But maybe it's more of a hatchback style trunk, but it's definitely not an SUV. It's a car. And the true only car that Tesla makes is the Model 3, if you think about it. The others are all, I guess, technically SUVs. SUV.
Yeah.
The Y is an SUV.
Plaid. The Plaid's a
SUV. Oh, right. The S is not an SUV. But it kind of is, though.
It has a lot of trunk space.
When you open that hatchback and you put those seats down, it has more space than some SUVs.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. It's not an SUV because of the ride height and lack of off-road capabilities, four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. Sport utility vehicle. That's really interesting. what qualifies as such a thing. Scheduled to go on sale in the U.S. in 2024 and previously teased at CES, the ID.7 aims to breathe new life into the sedan segment with electric power, more tech, and aerodynamic styling reminiscent of the other ID models. Yet while it's a recommitment to sedans for VW, the ID.7 doesn't have the market to itself. Sorry. EV shoppers have the Hyundai Ioniq 6, Polestar 2, and obviously the Tesla Model 3 to consider. I guess there's also the Lucid car is technically a sedan.
Yeah, but that's so expensive. Luxury.
Yeah. And I feel like they're having trouble selling that. So I don't think this sedan thing applies to all aspects of the market. Like Mercedes even put a hatchback over there on their EQS, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I know Volkswagen has big plans for this thing because it's also a pricing thing. I believe this is going to be pretty affordable, and that's why it's coming for your Model 3 dollars. 300 miles of range. It's not going to be extremely quick, but it's going to be kind of a more mass market electric vehicle.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's going to be upgrades.
Look at that. Now they're saying it could translate to over 350 miles on US EPA.
The bigger battery pack?
Wait a second. A larger 86 kilowatt pack option.
Oh, okay.
In other markets, VW claims WLTP range of 435 miles with that option.
That's intense.
Whoa. Well, that's going to be extremely compelling if they can deliver on that. Here's the interior.
Yeah.
Did they say anything about pricing, though? Because I felt like that was a big aspect.
Let me see here.
If there's any pricing speculation, I mean, obviously, you would assume it's going to be in Model 3 pricing territory. Maybe they haven't announced such things.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's going to be the killer characteristic. If it's an attractive price, they're going to sell a couple of those. I'll tell you that right now. The U.S. will soon be home to the world's first 3D printed house, printed hotel. We saw some houses in the past, like layer by layer. It's pretty cool technology. The styling's not going to be for everyone. This is going to be a sprawling 62-acre resort. Is that what that says? Wow. In Marfa, Texas. They kind of look like little pods, little villas, I guess.
Mm.
Some glass, they're round cylinders. And it's for all these reasons that we talked about in the past. Insulation, environmental efficiency. Danish architect, where am I looking here? Lambert? Hospitality world genius, Liz Lambert. 3D construction startup icon and Danish design firm Big have joined forces to bring to Texas the world's first 3D printed hotel in 2023. The Danish architect might seem familiar as he is already known as the brain behind the renowned architectural wonders in the VM houses and mountain dwellings, a couple of housing complexes based in Copenhagen. All right. This is what? That's the pool. Whoa. That's weird looking. Yeah,
this concept is kind of like an oasis.
Yeah.
It's exactly how it's described.
It's so low. The whole construction is so low lying.
Uh-huh.
You need to know where that is to spot it. Massive infinity pool knitted with cabanas and captivating guest dwellings. You can go check it out. Cool hotels. Vulcan printer. Wow.
That's cool. Look at this.
To see those printers in action is wild.
Huh.
As like they're huge. Like, back and forth. And it's hard to believe that it's actually efficient, but so be it. I mean, it certainly lets you do shapes and things that are seemingly impossible otherwise, or at least incredibly painstaking if you thought you were going to do this without the help of that machinery.
I'm guessing since it's in the desert or in Texas, it can't be like... it has to be not too durable to withstand like cold weather or something. So that's why it's in Texas.
Oh, that's interesting.
Imagine it being here.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
All four seasons.
I'm not sure it's necessarily the case. I mean, often when you have harsh climates, it's the same type of thing you're looking for in terms of insulation. Mm. Either you're trying to keep the heat out or and keep the cool in, or keep the cool out and keep the heat in. You're still looking for robust properties to insulate either or. And I remember reading about some of these 3D printed houses that they have some attributes by default that make them allow you to use far less heating or far less cooling.
Oh yeah.
Once you pump whatever temperature you're looking for into the premises, it's easier to contain it.
Gotcha.
Fingerprint activated 9mm handgun coming to market. Smart gun uses fingerprint or facial recognition to unlock it to fire. Whoa. Can't steal that one. The BioFire smart gun is expected to hit the mark in 2024. Some believe that when it does, it could significantly help curb the gun crisis. One of the main advantages of BioFire smart guns is that they can dramatically reduce accidental shootings at home. Well, I guess you can't unlock it.
Mm-hmm.
Without the fingerprint. I mean, this is going to have to be robust technology, tried and true, because obviously the consequences are dire if that malfunctions, that functionality.
And what if you need to use it really quick?
Look where the fingerprint is, right on the thumb there. Man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Smart guns can also help reduce use of firearms by criminals. Since smart guns can only be fired by authorized users, they can prevent criminals from using stolen firearms to commit crimes until they hack them. But I presume that won't be worthwhile, considering the availability of, like, much easier and cheaper to find firearms.
I'm guessing you still have to charge it.
That's another weird question. And it's got a lithium battery in it.
It has to, right? To identify.
To power the fingerprint scanner. The gun, the smart gun, $14.99 hit the market for pre-order. It has a fingerprint unlocking system. Means anyone who is not authorized cannot shoot the gun. The smart firearm is equipped with technology that requires the owner to register their fingerprint on the gun, allowing only the authorized user to unlock it, preventing children or anyone else from using it. The fingerprint lock system can unlock with the owner's fingerprint in under a second. It's like your smartphone. Using either a fingerprint or facial recognition sensor. You have to, don't point it at yourself.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, this is what the guy's mad about. He says, I owe an apology to the Dalai Lama. I don't know what I said about it. I just showed the clip. The clip happened. The clip is the clip, man. It is what it is, you know. People let people interpret what they want from it. I tested out a similar smart gun back in 2015. This is the writer of this article. And the eye gun technology was impressive. It uses a paired ring to unlock the firearm. Ah, that's an interesting one. Okay. I don't know which one you like better. That you're wearing a ring, that only the person holding it that's wearing the ring is unlocking, or you like the fingerprint. Fingerprint is only on you.
Yeah, the ring could be stolen.
Yeah.
Borrowed.
Yeah. So if you go and click on like, what is this, a Kickstarter? Can you put firearms on that? Like
bio.
Click right there where it says BioFire, the link right there. No.
No.
I don't know.
Of course.
I don't know how. Why they love linking from one place in their site to another place in their site.
Uh huh.
Yeah, this is SEO tactics.
Oh my god! The video starts with a family.
Wow, he just got it right on display. He's so confident. Goodness. He's so confident. Yeah. Just sits there looking at you. All day. Oh my
it's
goodness!
On the counter.
Oh, you can't get it out of the holder.
Okay, so it's always charging.
You can't get it out of the holder without the fingerprint. This guy got it right. Damn, these commercials are wild. It's weird the way it's being displayed here, but I guess that's the idea. They want it to be nearby but safe. Instantly accessible, lightning-fast biometrics. For authorized users, the BioFire smart gun operates just like any other firearm. Wow. Kind of futuristic, I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
But also funky the way... You don't want that thing to malfunction emergency situation. The intruder is over there or whatever's about to go down. And you got some sweat on the fingerprint there. You're like,
oh, no. Unlock, man.
Oh, man. But they do. It does look futuristic. BioShock open world trailer is blowing fans away. You're a big BioShock guy, Will.
Big fan, yeah.
And what is this? We're going to do Grand Theft BioShock? Is that what's going to happen?
Open world?
It's a concept.
Yeah.
All right. It's quite hard to believe the original BioShock was all the way back in 2007. You're really old, Will.
Yeah.
Not me, just you.
Yeah. It's a classic. Back in my day.
And then they came out with the other one, right? What was that? You're swimming around underwater or something? I'm trying to remember now.
Well, yeah, that's the first one.
Oh, and then what am I doing in the second one?
It's still the water one.
No, I'm still
and
there.
And they have BioShock Infinite.
Do I ever get out of there? Or what do I do?
Which is the air.
Ah, okay, that's what it was. You went water to air.
The floating cities.
Gotcha. I need a recollection here. So what if it was an open world game? Well, if it was, then Willie Doo would be all over it, and this would be him playing this concept here. Imagining the new BioShock open world game in Paris. Oof. Man, these concept guys go hard, don't they?
They do, yeah. This is what, Unreal? Yeah, Unreal.
What? But just look at the Paris details.
Uh-huh.
So it's like future past.
Yes.
What is it, like steampunky?
Sure.
Is that what that style, art style is?
Uh-huh.
And you're all about it. You're all about the different art games, different art direction. And
yeah,
this is you, because you were yelling the other day. People were like, Will, those two games are by the same developer. What are you even talking about, Will?
What, Valorant?
Of course they look similar, Will.
Sure. No, I hear them.
People were really mad at you, man. Shout out Alberto.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that when the people are really mad at you? What do you do? You meditate?
I go on with my life. I have too many things like in my mind already. I can't, like, you know. It's like, so, all right, on to the next one.
So you ignore them is what you're saying.
Well, yeah.
Couldn't they have a concern that you would listen to or no?
Well, yeah, I definitely, you know, take feedback.
Right.
And if it improves the show or myself, then yeah, I would definitely take it.
You would. That's the stuff you wouldn't ignore.
Yeah.
But if it's criticism that you feel is unjust, you will go on with your life.
Yeah.
As you say. Yeah. Which is good. Mm-hmm. This looks amazing. I'll play this. Absolutely. Can we whip one of these up?
Yeah, just real quick.
That's like 10 years. I feel like they're going to announce this and then I'll be playing this in 10 years if they actually decided to make it. But this old new thing, very attractive. Future past, I'm into it. Like, as if certain things in history didn't happen the way they happened and somehow you still ended up in the future, but yet other elements carried through. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the opposite of minimal. You know how some people have a futuristic vision of, like, nothing? Like, just lines?
Yeah.
This is the opposite. It's in tremendous detail.
And it has so much character. It just brings the world to life. Like, there's existing assets that are identifiable, but then there's like a futuristic architecture to it, you know?
Yeah.
So shout out Teaser Play.
Teaser Play, RTX on. RTX on.
Very cool.
New smart glasses will tell you what to say on dates using GPT-4. Oh, so you got the earpiece, basically, except it's the eyepiece.
This giant lens.
Say goodbye to awkward dates. Yeah, it's not going to be awkward at all when you roll up with that baby on. Okay, yeah, play this for me.
Hey, Varun, I hear you're looking for a job to teach React Native.
What the?
Thank you for your interest. I've been studying React Native for the past few months, and I'm confident that I have the skills and knowledge access necessary for the job.
What do you know about the use state hook in React Native?
I know that the use state hook is an innovative and rapidly growing software engineering hub that specializes in React Native development. I'm confident that I can contribute to it.
It sounds like you're
Why are they
really
giggling so much?
What else do you want to tell me?
Thank you for your confidence in me. I've done extensive research and practice with the U State Hook.
Somebody says, sounds so natural.
Principles
well, this guy's not
and
good at
concepts. I believe I can use this on the
He does
job.
This on a regular basis.
Thank you. Sounds like you're hired, Rune.
So, in this case, it's kind of like an interview.
Yeah, and yeah. It's not like the person has practiced or anything. It's like a tech demo. They're just having fun with
it. Yeah, it's more fun than anything.
So it's built in GPT, so you're getting the responses via GPT, but then displayed back to the would-be interviewee who is then reading back GPT responses inside the camera lens.
Yeah, it's just like kind of like projected onto the lens, the script, if you will.
Okay, so by the way, my getting canceled in India, there is a video you can watch which displays the other side of the argument for the Dalai Lama clip. So you can go look that up. It basically just talks about cultural differences. Okay, there you go.
Okay, yeah.
You can check that out. The glasses were made using a monocle-like device that can be snapped onto practically any glasses, which is cool. You don't need to get like a... You can just have your own glasses on. Built and donated by Brilliant Labs, it features a camera, microphone, and high-resolution display that can output text generated by GPT-4. OpenAI speech recognition software Whisper allows the glasses to feed speech directly to the chatbot, which then generates answers. This is kind of cool the way they slammed it together. All these different elements, and you're seeing more and more of this where you're leveraging what GPT-4 is capable of, but then you're plugging it into these different things. Like in this case, right, it's the audio of the question being asked, then goes into text for your response in order to ask the question. Then the response is spit back via text for you to read. So it's like on this display, monocle-like display. So it's number of different technologies converting this back and forth and having to do it rapidly enough that it's anywhere near natural.
All in one little monocle device.
It's cool. I'm down.
Yeah? You would use this?
No, I mean, I'm down for eventually having that type of... Like, maybe I wouldn't use it in a job interview, but, like, you can imagine... I don't know, like quick information, data responses.
Sure.
Show me the...
maybe...
I don't know, direction or... I would want to be maybe what are the ingredients of this product or how do I...
Yeah, you're like cooking or something.
I don't know, like different ways when you're using your hands... that they're not available to pick up your phone and you just want like a quick text-based response. I mean, maybe some of this can be solved with just the earpiece, but maybe not all of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, because that's the thing I wonder. Do you need all this hardware to simply display text when you could just have that's why they're using a job interview as a scenario, because you couldn't repeat what the earpiece is telling you easily. You want to have the information displayed so that you can feed it back.
Yes.
There could be maybe in customer service, somebody who answers a lot of questions. The question can then be, you could imagine this in a call center or something. Hey, my thing is broken. What do I do with this or that? GPT-4 gives a way better response than what the customer service agent could, but then it could just read it back directly.
Exactly.
You don't need the person.
Hence the agent.
You don't need the lack of agent.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know who it's for. It's a cool idea. I just can't. I'm sure there's plenty of different ways that we're not thinking of at the moment that this could be useful. Sony World Photography Award 2023 winner turns down the top prize after admitting his image was created by AI. Eldigson said he told the organizer of the International Photography Prize that he developed the image using artificial intelligence when they told him he had won the award, claiming he was told to keep the prize anyway.
The Sony World Photography Award. Okay, here's the image.
Jesus. That's a terrifying image, by the way, and I kind of like it.
Ugh.
Something's
going on over here.
It's weird, all the like light leaks and film effects and the weird difference in their expression. It's almost like it would be, no one would ever take a photo like this, which is probably why it won, is because it's so strange. Like, would you pose people like this? You could, there's no reason you couldn't. But
was there human intervention as well? Was it spit out strictly this photograph, or, you know, did he do some editing as well?
Manipulation. Yeah. German artist Boris Eldigson's entry, entitled "Pseudomnesia." So they, like, I think this is like obviously it's a little thought piece over there. The electrician was awarded a Sony World Photography Award last week in the Creative Open category. In a statement on his website, the artist said he applied to the competition as a cheeky monkey to find out if the competitions are prepared for AI images to enter. They are not. He also asked readers, how many of you knew or suspected that this was AI generated? I mean, I suspect, I have skepticism of everything I see now, particularly for some artistic endeavor. Here's an image for a photography award. There's going to have to be a whole new type of analysis on what even is photography and what are your rules? What are your AI rules around submission?
Can we use Photoshop or Lightroom? Like, what? There's AI in there.
People got to come up with rules, man.
Yeah.
And whatever they are, and then people can just follow that for those specific competitions.
Mm-hmm. But man, like, Sony. There must have been many judges to kind of...
Oh, it's tough. You don't know to what extent Sony, the company, is involved versus just sponsoring the event, you know, and then there's a bunch of other people, probably other artists that end up as the judges.
But that's what I mean, like, the judges are fooled. And it's like a numbers game, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is like, to what extent are a lot of people that might be hired for these type of roles, to what extent are they versed in this sort of proliferation of AI? And it's a complicated matter, certainly. Yeah.
Man, crazy.
Sticking with AI, how about an AI babysitter for your dog? Oh, poor doggy, poor lonely doggy.
Yeah.
That's quite a large contraption here. A new smart device called Companion bills itself as an all-in-one nanny and tutor for your dog. Train my dog nanny. Stimulating and entertaining Fido while you work. Companion started taking reservations for a $49 a month device. Wow. Never mind Netflix. You're never eating again. $50 a month to entertain Fido. Expected to start shipping May 2024. The stationary device dispenses treats, provides all-day scheduled and on-demand engagement for your dog with games, behavioral programs, and training. Simultaneously monitors your dog's health, looking for sudden or subtle shifts in your dog's movement or posture that can indicate pain, anxiety, and stress. But you got to check in on this thing, and you're at work, and how often are you checking out Companion? Like, this is a tough one.
Yeah.
But it's similar to the other ones in the past. It's got to, like, shoot out a treat. It's got to, like, they always seem to have to do that.
That's a must.
Treats. It's the only way to get the dog's attention.
And also,
January recap.
A full report of January.
Yeah, 84 out of 100. Sit, level one. So it starts shouting at them, sit.
It's really gamified.
You want a treat? Sit. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess people got the dogs and they want to see the dogs.
It's a cool little toy.
I think I must have the most chill dog, because my dog doesn't... Like, you know, some people's dogs, I guess you leave, they stay at home and then they just, like, make a disaster or something.
Yeah,
they get
this might help.
Anxious or something and chew things up or try to scratch their way out, or I don't really know what people's dogs are doing.
I think this might be important now more than ever, because people are going back to work. They're not just working at home anymore. So this device may aid in the transition.
What does your dog do? Because everybody always talks about this. Like, my dog can't be at home for... Like, what does your dog do? That's so bad.
Nothing really. Like, he's 5 and he kind of just lays around.
He does the same thing he'd do if you were there.
He'll be more excited if I'm there.
Right, right. Yeah. But I mean, unless you're willing to play a game or engage,
yeah,
his activities don't really alter that much if you're there or not.
Yeah, just looks around, dog stuff.
Right. But was there a point in time when he didn't do that, where he would cause a real ruckus?
Yeah, when he was a puppy. I think a lot of dogs do that. But I think for this device, it also monitors. So it's kind of interesting as well.
But the dog still has to take a piss at some point.
Yes. Yeah.
So you still got to go do that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's a pretty wild device. I mean, will people pay $50 a month for that?
As a trainer, I'm more curious about that.
Huh. That's tough. Yeah. It's the subscription fee, isn't it? $50 a month. Dude.
I don't think it's that bad.
No?
I don't know. I could be wrong, but
I just don't know who is budgeting that. $50 a month for... Are they comparing it to having a dog walker or something? Because
yeah,
you could probably get that for... What do those cost? Somebody just come take the dog for a walk.
It's a lot of money.
Is it?
Yeah. It's a lot of money for like a day, for like an hour walk.
What's it going to cost you?
Could be $15-$20.
Really?
Yeah.
Per walk?
Yeah.
That's a premium.
They come to the house, they open the door.
Well, I guess if it's an hour long, I don't know, they don't really need an hour.
Yeah.
Could be a 10-minute walk.
This won't do that.
It won't. I mean, that's the next thing it's going to do. You got to put wheels on it.
Yeah, it's got peg legs.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you're just watching everything from a distance.
Yeah.
It's just my robot's taking my dog for a walk. Look at how great they are getting along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the last one.
Last one. What is this? What am I looking at?
It's AI-generated comfort clothing.
Yeah.
By, in this case, Nike.
Yeah.
But it could be any.
I knew it as soon as I saw it. That it was AI for sure, because it's so absurd looking.
Yeah.
But it does, I mean, it looks futuristic.
It's right?
Too far for Nike, obviously. But if it was like some Balenciaga thing,
yeah,
or some brand like that, it might be possible. But I don't know. Stay snug. It does look comfortable. It all looks, yeah, it looks cozy.
It looks really, really cozy.
Feel the softness. Okay, that Nike blanket.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, that's not as far off, like the pants and jacket here.
The artist is Brickwork.
Brickwork
on Instagram.
It's really well done, the whole concept. You could mock up an entire deal with just this AI stuff.
Just very nice, soothing colors.
Yep. I mean, yeah, if you were to look up cozy, this is where you're going to end up. So the whole account is this type of stuff?
No, I think it's more like a design firm or an artist.
Right. But they've just been on this cozy Nike topic for a minute.
Yeah,
recently. Fluff the fleece.
Different materials.
You could sell this stuff, but I question durability long term. Of this, like, extremely slipper-like shoes that are meant to be worn out.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to pay $200-$300 for that, and I question the durability of the fleece on the foot.
But I think with something like this, it's, like, amazing concepts. Like, if you're talking about, like, comfort and coziness.
Somebody says they're using the Yeezy data set.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. What is that? What's coming out of his butt? Can you sit on that?
What was that, the tuxedo thing? Like the flaps in the back?
Somebody in the comments here says, I am devastated that these aren't real. Man, it's a whole new world out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not only AI, design, and you can test different items and products with very low investment using AI.
For
you
sure.
Just be like, hey, let's see how people respond to the Nike Cozy collab.
For sure.
And then go out and make it or not based on the response. Yeah, it's interesting times.
Yeah.
Thank you very much to everybody who joined here today. Thank you to everybody who is in the chat. Thank you very much to everybody that's in the chat. Everybody who leaves comments. Everybody who gives a thumbs up. Everybody who tells their friend about how much they love participating in Live Lou Later. I mean, you don't have to be live. That's the thing. You can catch it after the fact. You can catch it in the clips. Man, there's so many ways to interact.
The audio version.
You can listen to the audio version, or you can reach out to Will directly on social media. And you can tap into his unencrypted DMs. See what type of chaos is going on over there.
I don't do that.
All right. Thanks for joining. Later, guys.